listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants, the greatest team in all of Major League Baseball history, in my humble opinion. This is episode 28, the Buster Posey episode, and it is April, is it the 29th? Oh, my God. That's crazy.
It is the 29th. Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay, so, yeah, we're that voice you heard was Chad King. We're not joined, unfortunately, by Ben Lee today. He's in. He's kind of taken a pretty cool looking baseball trip. I think he said he went to. Did he go to Yankee Stadium too? I've been following his tweets and stuff.
You know, he's been to Citi Field, Yankee Stadium, and Citizens Bank Park, as well as visiting the MLB Fan Cave, where he infiltrated the confines and actually got a picture with Smashley Chavez, which is one of the nine fans. Or MLB fan cave residents, if you will,
yeah.
Who's a Giants fan. And the other guy, I forget his name, but anyway, he got a picture with the two of them. And they were really kind. They retweeted their support for Torture Cast, which was nice. So that was pretty cool.
But,
you know, he better get something out of it, actually,
yeah.
Other than just a picture. But no, he's having it looks like he's having a great trip. He also saw, a minor league Yankees game?
Yeah.
In which Andy Pettit pitched.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so... He's having quite an experience back there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I really had no. I don't think he talked about it on this show that he was going on this trip. And
no.
Then all of a sudden he's all over the place.
Going to New York. That was it. Yeah. Suddenly it's like three major league parks, minor league, fan cave. You know, you name it. He's doing it. He even saw the space shuttle fly over New York.
Oh wow! That was its final flight, right?
Exactly.
That's it.
It was on the. The piggyback carrier, you know?
Yeah.
So
and they're taking it to the Space Museum, I think, or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. They flew right over, you know, Statue of Liberty in New York and all Battery Park. And so he was in Battery Park and he saw it. So, he's had an eventful trip.
We're excited to get him back and we'll hear all about that on the next show, hopefully. And let's talk about the Giants. I mean, we're basically a month into the season at this point, and the Giants are 12-10. There's been some pleasant surprises, some disappointments, I would say. And right now I don't think the Giants are quite at where they want to be, but, you know, you can kind of feel the optimism in this ball club right now because of the things that are going right are things that we really needed to go right. And the other stuff is, I mean, minus Brian Wilson going down, you know, potentially career ending. I mean, you know, who knows really what's going to happen with that, but definitely season ending. That was a big blow, but then all the other things that have kind of fallen into place are things that these were question marks coming in, and a lot of these have been answered in a positive way. So even though we're 12-10, still four games behind the Dodgers, I feel personally like this is a much better ball club than last year. And what's been your general feeling so far after 22 games?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of bad starts by the starters, especially in that Arizona series to begin the season.
So opening with a sweep is never good. Yeah.
Yeah, you throw out a couple of bad starts and suddenly they're 14-8, okay? And 14-8 is the next best record in the National League to the Dodgers. So, I mean, you know, they can't really look at it as saying it's a bad start.
Yeah.
Certainly if they have this offensive production last year or in 2010, their record certainly would be better than 12-10 at this point because their pitching was better both of those years. But that being said, I think they're going to take what they have right now because it looks like, you know, Lincecum's riding his ship. You know, we had a couple of bad starts by Kane and Baum. Zito is, I don't know what happened, if he did some sort of weird seance or if he's been possessed by some alien creature. We're going to take it.
Yeah.
So you have to look at those positives and say, hey, you know, 12-10, four games out, you know, the Dodgers have the best record in Major League Baseball right now, and they're going to come crashing down. I mean, they're not going to hold that.
No, absolutely. I mean, right now,
momentum
Kemp
for the rest
and
of the year.
Andre Ethier are both putting up some ungodly numbers. I mean, Ethier's average doesn't really look that great, but he's got 24 RBIs at this point.
Yeah,
and he just seems to be getting the hits when there's guys on base, and they're getting guys on base. And the thing is, though, they really only have one, you know, I would say quality starter. They got some other guys who, you know, can be good, but nobody's really consistent like Kershaw in that rotation. So I don't feel like this is going to last for them. I really don't feel like the Dodgers are going to be the team that we're fighting with, you know, towards the end of the season. I really do think that Arizona's going to step it back up at some point once they get past the injuries.
You remember last year, or maybe it was 2010, the Kansas City Royals were in first place in the AL Central, you know, a month and a half into the season. So you look at that and you go, okay, fine. You know, some teams have hot starts and they're, quote, in first place, but I really don't, you know, I really don't think they're going to have the stamina to last. So
no.
I'm not too worried.
And look at like teams like Miami or the Angels. Like, these are supposed to be teams that were going to compete, and they're off to horrible starts, but I still believe that they're going to be, you know, there towards the end. So
yeah, Pujols, no home runs, and
no
what
home
about
runs.
108 at bats. That's pretty insane.
That's weird, man. I seen him hit a couple that looked like they were pretty good, and then he has warning track power now all of a sudden. I don't know what happened. So let's talk about the Wilson situation. Brian Wilson goes down for the year at least. He's going to need another surgery on his elbow, and it's just bad news. You know, he seemed pretty optimistic about it. Did this happen before the show we did 2 weeks ago? Did we talk about it at all then?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
we pretty much assumed he was going to have surgery at that point. It wasn't 100% confirmed, but that's what the rumors were at the time. We had talked about how he said he was going to stay with the team and essentially not be a coach, but be there as a player slash coach, absorb what he could, be a motivating factor, all of those things. Unlike, you know, he's not a family guy. He doesn't have a wife and kids and all that. So he wants to be there for the, you know, be there for the team, which is pretty cool. Unlike Freddie Sanchez, which I talked about, and it's no knock on Freddie Sanchez. I even said in that podcast that, you know, hey, if I was injured with Tommy John surgery and I was out for the year, I'd be at home rehabbing.
I would be traveling
with the team. But it's kind of cool that he's going to be with the team for a lot of the year. And so he's going to be able to be there in mind and in spirit and in body. He's just not going to be able to throw strikes. So I think that's actually going to have some tangible results with the way he might be able to, you know, motivate players, talk to them, that force in the clubhouse. He's not going to attack any Gatorade coolers, I don't think.
No. So that would be pretty funny if he starts doing that just kind of in honor of
just
other
one
people.
Armed. Yeah,
just,
this is
just
left
when
arm,
somebody else whack, has a bad whack. Outing. All of a sudden you cut to the dugout and he's bashing the Gatorade cooler.
Well, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Someone comes in with a bat and he just like stops him, grabs the bat from them, and just starts.
He's like, no. I'm already injured. I can do this.
I'd love that. He's got his shtick.
I think honestly though, he's the type of person that, you know, you want in the clubhouse, that he keeps the whole team having fun. I mean, Aubrey Huff, we all thought that he was the guy who did that too. But Huff's got a little bit of a different situation, which actually, I mean, okay, well, let's before we get to Huff, let's talk about Casilla as the now filling in for. I mean, Bochy had talked about he was going to do this by committee, and he did. For a couple games there were times where he was rotating guys in and out in the ninth inning. But now it's really looking like this is going to be Casilla's spot, and he looks to me like he deserves it. I mean, he's really nasty right now. I think his ERA is almost exactly one. It's like 1.03 or something like that. He hasn't blown a save yet. He really hasn't even brought torture into any of these. I mean, two nights ago was probably the closest thing. They got a runner on second base with one out, but then he pretty much nailed it down from there. So I got to say, give it to him the whole rest of the year. I mean, he could challenge some people for some save honors, you know, with the way he's throwing the ball.
Well, when you have other teams with guys throwing 87-mile-an-hour sliders as their closers, I mean, he brings the 95-96 heat, and he's got a nasty curveball as well,
yeah,
and a changeup.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's got some stuff as long as he throws strikes. Because, I mean, I was watching that game today. And first of all, you know, two nights ago, he did well. Two saves ago, he struck out the side in like 12 pitches. It was insane. I mean, he was just lights out. And today, he did have a little bit of a struggle. He didn't have a Brian Wilson kind of thing.
No, it wasn't the bases and all that. A duck snort, you know, single followed by a walk followed by, you know, an error.
He didn't even get the tying run to the plate. So, you know, that was a good thing. But, you know, he was throwing strikes. He was in the zone, and then he would just lose it. It was kind of strange to watch, where he would throw high. And he had that walk, and he had a couple of 3-2 counts that he got, you know, guys to strike out or pop up on. So he did fine. He had like 30 pitches in the inning, which was pretty high. But he's got some nasty stuff.
He really does.
And as you know, anyone else in the bullpen right now, he has the most electric stuff. And that's kind of what a closer is built on.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem like a guy who's going to be too bothered by a couple of walks here and there. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. Because he is a guy right now until he starts faltering. He's 4-for-4 in save opportunities, which is a small sample size.
And he was
6-for-6
last year as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, hasn't blown a save now in 10 straights. And that's, you know, that's what you need out of this guy. I mean, we all know the closer is going to blow a save here and there during the season. But you just want a really low number of those. And he's right now. Yeah, I mean, we've talked on the show before about Romo would be our guy if we had to pick, you know, and I think Romo still makes a lot of sense, but you know, once you put Casilla in there and he performs the way he has, you know, you can't change now. You got to let the guy go until he does falter. You're right. So I'm really stoked to see how Casilla rides the season out. I really do think that he could easily end up with 40 plus saves the way he's throwing the ball right now. He's gotten a little bit of a late start on it, but you know, it's also going to take the Giants winning a lot of close games, which we know the team is fairly well built to do. So. You know, he potentially could end up with pretty gaudy numbers, I think, at the end of the year.
Well, no, he could. I mean, Wilson had one save. I mean, who has another save on the team right now?
Nobody else, I don't think. Unless maybe
so he doesn't really have that late of a start. He might right now theoretically only have one save that he missed out on.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Well, I think maybe Lopez does. I'm not sure though. I'll check.
Yeah, that's possible, but it's definitely not a high number. So.
I mean, that's really exciting to know that you can bring a guy in to replace, you know, an all-star closer and have somebody come in and just do as well as he's done. It's really cool. And this is one of the things about the Giants this year. We've got a lot of depth, even though it doesn't feel like it sometimes. We actually have more, I think, than we've had previously. And right now, Bochy's been using everybody everywhere. Which I think has affected us negatively in a couple of ways, but also it's also I think it shows promise towards the end of the year, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. Oh, Hensley has a save. That's another guy I really like. I like this kid. He's got that weird breaking left to right pitch that just nobody seems to be able to figure out. Okay, let's talk about Posey now. This is so when I talked at the beginning of the show about some of the pluses, we weren't sure if we were going to get these things. And they've come through. I think Buster Posey was definitely one of those. We didn't know how, you know, his leg was going to react. We didn't know how he was going to be at the plate after not having seen live pitching for a really long time. And right now, he's among the league leaders in batting average. He's got pop. He's hitting all parts of the field, really driving the ball well, turning on the ball. And he looks pretty comfortable behind the plate as well. So, I mean, the other day when he threw out the guy at first, pickoff at first, and then immediately on the next pitch, threw the guy out trying to steal third. I mean, that just changed that whole game, I felt. And so it really, he's just back playing baseball. He's Buster Posey again.
It doesn't look like he's any slower than he was before. Yeah.
It's hard to get slower, but
No, he was in the speedster before. Yeah. But I mean, he's scoring from second base. He's running first to third on singles.
He's stealing third.
He's hitting doubles and coming in. Yeah, it looks like it's holding up just fine.
Yeah, so I mean, honestly, at this point, I just say, you know, knock that off your list of things to be worried about right now, because he's just, you know, the top four in the lineup right now have been absolutely spectacular the last week or so, 2 weeks even. And like I'd say, yeah, pretty much since Pagan has come around, the top four in the lineup have been just solid all the time. And you pretty much know what you're going to get from those guys. And that's something that we just have not had. I mean, with Huff batting in the cleanup position for so long, you just didn't really know. Like you weren't sure you were going to get your RBIs from your RBI guys. And right now it does not feel that way. It really does feel like it's tough on pitchers to get through the top of our lineup. And that's the way it should be on a major league ball club. And we haven't seen it in a really long time. So it's almost weird. It's almost weird to watch. When I'm at a game, I don't just feel like we got, you know, three up, three down is almost going to happen every single inning. I really do feel like we got a chance to you know, start a rally. Almost at
no, there is
point
a
the
different feeling this year. I agree. I mean, I know it's early, but it does feel like this year that it's not an automatic out. I mean, look at today, what happened. You know, you had Hector, and I'm not saying I put a lot of stock into Alex Arias, and it could have been a one-time thing, but still, you know, you had runners in second, third with one out, and Hector grounds out weakly, and you know, they were talking on the broadcast, and they're like, "Hey, perfect spot is to pick Sanchez up, make him feel better. You know, have him, give him a high five," and boom, he goes oppo triple to right field and scores two runs. And it's like Hector Sanchez is in the dugout just going, thank you, buddy.
Oh, okay. Big leagues. Right. Yeah. Big leagues. You can get picked up here. It's true. I mean, I didn't, you know, last year you ground out weakly with runners at second and third and you get to two outs and it's like the inning's over. It's just, if we can't produce in those situations with runners at third and less than two outs, we're not going to produce, period. We're not getting the two out hits. And this year, it's still been a little bit of a struggle. We're not.
No, it is. They're actually still hitting under 200 with runners in score position and two outs. So it's still not a good situation, but overall, the offense is still better. So
it absolutely is. And it feels like they're hitting the ball a lot better. I mean, some of the guys, too, like Crawford has been kind of raking the ball and getting no results, really. There's been a couple other guys who have been hitting the ball really well and not getting results. I mean, Nate Sheerholtz was ungodly hot for a little while, and then he was like 0-13 immediately after, but he was still actually hitting the ball decently. And, you know, so, I mean, it's just kind of right now it's like they're just not getting the lucky bounce maybe, but they are hitting the ball a lot better. And I mean, when you talk about Pagan coming around and Melky's just been kind of consistent the entire year, you got Pablo Sandoval, who's just been ridiculously good so far. And then Buster Posey, it's like, yes, please, you know. So I'm feeling really good about that. Posey's doing great. Pablo's doing great. These were a couple things that were kind of question marks. We didn't know how. We didn't know which of these guys we were going to get, you know. We're going to get 2009 Pablo or 2010 Pablo. And we're getting an even better 2012 Pablo. So now this is a weird situation the Giants have right now. We got Hector Sanchez taking ground balls at first base. Potentially preparing to play first base when Buster Posey plays catcher. How many first basemen do we need on this team?
It's a little strange because, you know, we already talked about the logjam the Giants have at first base. I mean, they got Belt, they got Huff, they got Posey, they got Pill.
Yeah. Who's not going to play first base, basically.
And now they're talking about Hector Sanchez, you know, practicing at first base. And they interviewed Boch about it. And he said, well, he's had 45 starts at first base in the minor leagues. And a lot of catchers have corner infield experience. I understand that. But he said it was for late inning options. So that's his reasoning at this point. So, but with four other first basemen, granted Huff has been out with his, you know, anxiety disorder, but he's going to come back here in the next week or so. That seems pretty down far the depth charts to go. So
I just find it bizarre
do you read between the lines there that this happened after Huff went out?
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't seem like, to me, it doesn't feel like Huff is going to be a major factor on this team this year anymore, which is sad, but. Yeah, I mean, we all love Huff, you know. Let's be honest. We all love the guy. The guy's been fantastic for us as far as a personality, and 2010 obviously was great. But, you know, now it's been an entire year of slumping Huff, and he hasn't looked good so far this year. And then the whole incident where he had to play second base, which we all knew was going to be weird, but I didn't see that coming, that he was going to not cover the base.
No,
pretty obvious.
I didn't
play.
See that either.
Yeah. I mean, I figured the guy's played enough baseball; he's going to know like where to run. As you know, he might not be able to turn a double play, but he'll know where to run. You know, but he was not anywhere near the base. And then immediately he has this anxiety disorder. I just feel like there's something going on with him. It's taking his head out of the game, and he needs to go get that figured out. And I honestly think we're fine without him for now. Let him get his situation sorted out. We've got enough first basemen. Come back whenever you're ready. And, you know, and then if you produce then great. But if not, I think we're all kind of prepared for that at this point. The Giants seem like they're prepared for it, too. Like, they're just kind of going, okay, well, Huff would be a bonus at this point.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people going into this season realize that, you know, this is going to be Huff's last season with the Giants. And they're just hoping for something better than last year. Didn't even have to be on par with 2010, where, you know, he's always good on the even years. He's kind of like the opposite of Brett Saberhagen, right, with the odd years. But, he's a Major League Baseball player, and it's really strange to see someone who, normally he doesn't play second, but you're a baseball player. You've been playing it most of your life. You know strategically where you're supposed to go, even if you don't play that position.
And you're supposed
even
to
if
think
you don't play
about
catcher,
that.
You know, even if you don't pitch, you know, oh, I go back up the catcher on a throw to home plate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're not a second baseman. Oh, well, I know I need to go cover this, you know, the bag on these plays. I mean, there's certain things that are just, they're just known.
Yeah.
You
could stick me at second base. You could stick me at second base right now, and I would know to cover that bag.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And I'm not a ball player, period. I mean, I've played some baseball, but I would not consider myself. And I always was pitcher, I did play second base from time to time, but I wouldn't consider that my position, you know, and I would know that. So that was just, and it honestly really did contribute to us losing that ball game. So it's, you know, it's a rough situation for the guy, but honestly, at this point, I feel like we just let him do his thing, get mentally, better. Worry about that, you know. And
did
then,
you see the article by Henry Schulman, by the way?
Yeah, because he said that he has also struggled with some of these issues through his life, and that it's a really, you know, a tough situation to be in. I can appreciate that. I mean, I know people who have had mental health issues, and it's not easy to go about regular daily life, and it can't be easy to be a Major League Baseball player when, you know, mentally you're not healthy.
Well, he summarized, you know, not only his own admission, which he had never publicly stated, which was an opening for him to talk about how he's had to be treated, and he still currently is treated medicinally and psychologically or psychotherapy-wise for his anxiety disorders, but also the list of Major League Baseball players that have had to go on the DL for essentially the same thing that Huff is going through. And so he was trying to highlight the fact that, you know what, these guys are under tremendous amount of stress and they are human beings with problems in their own lives. And sometimes it comes to a head and they need to take care of their own business.
Yeah.
And so you got to appreciate that and you got to feel for them. And, you know, the list of guys he had, there were definitely guys that came back and had stellar years, MVP years. So, you know, you got to hope that he deals with what he needs to deal with and he comes back and he takes care of business and he'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just hope the guy's just going to be okay in life in general. Like whether he comes back and plays baseball for us, that's great. But like I said, I feel like it's just a bonus at this point if he does. It's very much, I mean, the guy's had kind of a rough life. I mean, his father was murdered.
Yeah.
He was a child. You know, and yeah, sure, he's played Major League Baseball, which is not that rough, but, you know, he's gone through some of his own personal issues throughout the years and stuff as well. So, you know, it's like that stuff is always more important than baseball, you know, and it's sad to see that he's going through this right now. But I'm hopeful that he can get himself together. He's got the resources to go out and get help. So that's great. And a lot of people around him who really care about him. So. All right, so we tried to add Ben, but that was kind of a no-go. It was he was on 3G and he was in a bar and it was cutting in and out. But he did attempt to join us today on the show, but you know, for your own ears, the sake of your own ears.
We don't want to hurt your ear holes.
So, but he may end up getting us something to play at the end. So stick around for that. Listen to the end of the show. We might have some interview material from him, and maybe he's going to record something else too. So that'll be cool. Let's talk about Tim Lincecum. Struggled early. Definitely did not look like Timmy. But the last couple starts, you know, the last start he battled. He got the win. Didn't look great. Still had a couple rough patches, but. definitely looked closer. And then this last start looked a lot better, I thought. Still not as sharp as we've seen him, obviously. I mean, we've seen the guy have lights out stuff. But, you know, won a close ball game, a 2-1 ball game, picked up the win. And so when you give up only one run over, what was it, seven innings or something? Seven and two-thirds or something like that? You know, that's a good start. And whether you had to battle or not, threw 120 pitches or so and you know, got the team a win. So this is what we need from Timmy. We need him to be that old Timmy. And I, and personally, I feel like with Timmy, he's got so much going on with his delivery that when he starts thinking about mechanics, he stops pitching. He stops thinking about the hitter. He starts just thinking about what he's doing with his body as he's trying to throw the ball. And you really can't do that against a major league hitter. If the ball is up at all, they're always going to hit it. If you miss your locations, they're always going to, you know, make you pay. So he really needs to get back to that just not thinking, just throwing the ball, pitching, playing the game of baseball, you know? And that's really what he hasn't been doing and what he looks like he's starting to do again. So I almost feel like I can almost knock Timmy off my worry list here pretty soon, too. I think he's really, really close to coming back.
He's on the road to recovery. That's
right.
For sure.
Yeah.
His starts have gotten progressively better over the five or four starts he's had. The last start he had was his first quality start of the year, which is kind of surprising. It took this long to happen. I mean, he's never had a start to the season like he's had. In fact, his ERA is still at 5.74. But, you know, I mean, after three starts, it was still above 10. So he's bringing that down. His whip, his all that stuff is still high. So I think it's clear that, you know, even if he is the Tim Lincecum of old for the rest of the year, you know, 2.75 ERA the rest of the year, his ERA is still going to be above 3 just because of this bump the road he's had at the beginning of the season. So
it'll be tough to get it down under 3 for sure.
He's not going to have, I mean, unless he literally does turn into Super Lincecum, you know, or Clayton Kershaw last year or whatever, his ERA is going to be above 3, you know, all that stuff. His whip's going to be well above 1. But, you know, that's fine. The Giants, you know, are paying for, you know, a, 13-game winner because the offensive production. And they don't expect him to always be at 2.75. It's, you know, might be at 3.25 this year or whatever. But that's okay because, you know, we have a couple of bad starts where you have, I mean, you know, you give up 8 or 9 runs in 3 innings, a couple starts in a row. That's going to kill your ERA for the year. So look at Mad Bum last year. I know we're going to talk about him soon here, but you know what he started last year, 0-7 or 0-8?
Yeah, he just could not get the victories, you know? And then you start thinking about, well, how is he going to finish the year at 500 at all, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and Lincecum actually has, he's 2-2 right now.
Yeah.
5-7-4. So.
So he only picked up 2 losses. I mean, one of the games with the offense bailed him out. And got him a no decision after a pretty poor start, you know. But
the irony is that he had, what, a 2.79 ERA last year?
2.74.
2.74?
Yeah.
But he was 12-11?
13-14, yeah.
13, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
You have all the stats in front of you. See, I'm going off memory, which clearly
you're pretty
is
pretty good, though, man. You got one of those, you're like, really good memory, but never quite exactly what it is.
I'm in the ballpark.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But anyway. Considering that he was 13-14 last year with a, you know, half the ERA he has now, you know, he still has a shot at winning 15 games this year if he turns it around. So.
Yeah, he's just gotta get back to Timmy of old, and I'm pretty sure that's gonna happen. Bumgarner actually last year you mentioned that he couldn't get a win for like 7 or 8. He ended the year 13-13, so you gotta consider that like just a fantastic job of playing catch up with you know, his win totals. So, but you know what, when Barry Zito's got a 1.67 ERA and Kane's got a 2.37 and Bumgarner's got a 2.5, it's okay if Timmy struggles a little bit. We'll let him get back on track. And once he does, and Vogelsong as well needs to get back on track. I mean, he's looked, it's not like he's really looked bad. He just hasn't really put it all together yet in a start, you know? And he really does have to have location with his fastball to be the Vogelsong we saw last year. Yeah. But those 5 guys, I mean, that's going to be – we're going to have the potential to reel off, you know, 10, 11 wins in a row when all those guys start getting their games together. Hopefully it all happens at one time. And hopefully the Zito thing is not a flash in the pan. I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth in that pretty, pretty mouth of his. but, but you know, whatever. Let's talk about Zito right now. We might as well. 1.67 ERA. I mean, that's gaudy. That's crazy. And even the starts where he hasn't pitched fantastically, he's kept the team in the ball game. He pitched through errors a couple times. That was something he never was able to do before. And, you know, before, if Zito gave up a walk, that guy was going to score. If Zito had a defensive error behind him, that guy was going to score. The team was going to pay. And this year, he seems to be able to get himself out of jams, which is something he has not been able to do. And, you know, he's not throwing the ball harder. He's just mixing his pitches better, and he seems to have found some weird camaraderie with Hector Sanchez where he's calling the right pitches at the right times, and his pace is moving well, and he just looks like he's, you know, he's competing out there. And it's great to see. I mean, we've all given Zito a bunch of crap, you know, because of the contract, but we've all been rooting for him the entire time as well. It's not like we didn't want him to be good. We just were upset that he wasn't. And
well,
so,
you know, for the money that we're giving him, he actually, you know, needs to have about a 0.25 ERA this year.
Yeah, to make up for it.
To bring down his Giants career ERA to, you know, the salary that he's getting paid. But that's not going to happen.
No.
Yeah, it's surprising nonetheless. I mean, granted, it's only four or five starts in, but, you know, him and Sanchez definitely seem to have a relationship. He seems to be pitching backwards a little bit better, but that's really stemming on the fact that he's throwing strikes. I mean, you can't pitch backwards if you don't throw strikes, you know. Yeah. You're starting with curveballs that, you know, are high and outside, and you're 2-0, and then you got to come inside with a fastball. That's when he's getting torched.
Yeah, that's when they're looking for it, you know. But on,
you know, this year he's starting with that changeup and the fastball, and he's getting, you know, 1-2, 0-2 starts, and then he can locate that fastball in the dirt or a changeup in the dirt or a curveball, you know, outside. He's getting that stuff. So guys are feebly swinging at this stuff, which they see as bad. Practice speed, you know. I mean, they're like, oh, come on, I can torch this stuff. But, you know, you look at guys in the past, like, you know, Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine and these kind of pitchers who don't have overpowering stuff and are actually pretty slow, but can locate exactly where they want to throw. And this is where Zito has always thrived in his Cy Young year and, you know, his career with the A's. So I don't know why it's happening right now, but I mean, as Giants fans, we just got to like not ask him any questions about it.
Yeah, like let's not talk to him. Let's pretend he's always throwing a no-hitter. And
I hate it when interviewers are like, oh, so Zito, so what are you doing differently? Don't talk to him.
Yeah, don't make him think about it. Just let
Jesus Christ.
I mean, the guy threw a friggin' shutout. That was the first time he'd done that as a Giant.
Yeah,
first time since his Cy Young. That was the first time that it happened.
I know.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I have no explanation for it, and I don't care to know. Just let it go. Let it be.
Yeah, it's like a no-hitter. It's like you just don't even talk to the pitcher.
Yeah, he sits all by himself.
Let him sit in the corner. Let him do his own Zen thing and just keep it going.
Yeah.
You know?
So one guy that we definitely knew was quality, and he hasn't really disappointed so far. He hasn't had all of his starts be as strong as he's not Bumgarner right now with four straight wins, but Matt Cain is definitely looking like the guy who deserves, you know, $20 million a year, and that's just fantastic because we needed him to steady us when all of our other pitchers were not having. I mean, he was part of the problem in that first series, and you know, since then he's really, really figured it out. It's fantastic. Cain is at 2.37 ERA. 26 strikeouts in 30 innings pitched. He's never really like a big strikeout guy, but he's a guy who goes out and he'll get like 5 or 6 a game, you know? But yeah, his whip is crazy. 0.63.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's getting on base. No one's swinging the bat well against this guy right now. And, it's a lot of fun to watch when he's on, man. That pitching duel, against Halliday, or sorry, was it, it was Cliff Lee, right?
It was Cliff Lee. Yeah.
Cliff Lee, we put him on the DL. I mean, he couldn't hang, dude.
Him going 10 innings, put him on the DL.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Cain went toe-to-toe with him, and that was one of my favorite games so far this year. You know, winning in extra innings against a pitcher like that.
They completed 9 innings in an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, we went to a bar, and I swear I had 2 beers or something by the time the game was over. Like, yeah. We were not there. We were there. I looked at my clock. I'm like, what? It's 8:30 right now, and it's the 9th inning. What's going on here? It was a fun ball game to watch. And my roommate actually just went to a ball game. She never goes to baseball games. And she goes, yeah, the game was over really quickly. And I was like, that's Giants baseball, man. We're not in the American League. You get these like 4-hour behemoths of games where it's, you know, 11 to 10. We don't have to sit through that, thankfully. Our games are over quickly because of our pitching, too. But yeah, Kane's doing great. And then now we got to talk about Bumgarner. I just watched him pitch another gem. It was a fantastic game today. 4 wins in a row now. And sub 3 ERA, his ERA actually went down, so now he's at 2.5. And another really good whip as well, 1.09. And I heard on the pregame, they were talking about, do you think Madison Bumgarner could win a Cy Young? So I'm going to pose that question to you. Do you think Madison Bumgarner is the type of pitcher that could one day win a Cy Young award in this league?
One day, absolutely.
Yeah.
No doubt.
The kid's 22. So.
I mean, there are some people, including... you know, hanging sliders, Wendy Thurm, who actually, you know, been interviewed. She actually predicted Bum getting the Cy Young this year.
Wow.
I'm not on that bandwagon yet.
Okay.
I mean that's just a little too soon. He's 22 years old, like you said. But he is just getting better and better and better. And it looks like nothing phases him.
Ever.
I mean, he's this, you know, good old Texas boy, and he's got his accent and everything else. But he's just a student of the game.
Yeah.
And I absolutely see, you know, it might not be this year or next year or even the year after, but, you know, by age 25, 26, 27, when he gets into the prime of his career, because that's usually the age in which athletes hit their prime in baseball. Absolutely. I think that's going to happen. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. He, you know, this year they think he's going to have a 3.5, 3.6, 3.7 ERA by Zips and other forecasting agencies.
Yeah.
You know, I always put him under that. I mean, yeah. I don't think he's going to be at 2.5 like he is right now. He's going to have a couple of bad starts like, you know, last year against the Twins, you know, that kind of thing. He's going to have a couple of blips on the radar that inflate his ERA. But I do think that within a few years, he's going to just nail it all together. He's not, you know, a 96 mile an hour lefty, but he's 92, 93. That wicked slider and changeup, I mean, he's going to dominate in a couple of years.
All of his pitches kind of come from the same spot, and they don't. It's not like he, you know, has a breaking downwards curveball or whatever. Everything kind of moves the same, but it's subtle differences between all the pitches.
Yes.
And he mixes them up so effectively, and you cannot tell what he's throwing ever. I mean, it all just looks like the same slinging motion, and then it's impossible for these guys to pick up some, you know, and that's really his big thing. He doesn't have to throw 96. He can get away with 92 and make it look really quick because they can't see the ball coming out of his hand. So,
well, and like you said, he slings it. He comes from a unique arm angle. He's not like a Dan Quisenberry. He's not over the top. He's 3/4.
Yeah.
And so it is something that most players are not used to as far as that arm slot. And because he's so consistent with that release point, he can, you know, just have 2 or 3 or 4 pitches, just subtle differences. And that's all the difference in the world. I mean, when you go to wood bats, you know, I'm playing in a league right now with metal bats. Metal bats are somewhat forgiving.
Yeah.
If, you know, you're up on the handle by an inch or two, you can still muscle it out into left field or something. But wood bats, I mean, you're talking a very, very small sweet spot. And if you go up just an inch or two off that sweet spot, that's the difference between a double and an out.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
I mean, that's what he's living on.
And that's exactly what his pitches do, because you look at the slider, you look at the curveball, you look at the two seam fastball, they all seem to kind of start in the same spot and then just end in a different place. And that's what these guys are looking at, and they're not hitting it. So, you know, honestly though, Wendy's looking like a little bit, you know, of a prophet here, because it's usually the guy who wins a Cy Young who gets that fast start and then is somehow able to maintain through the rest of the year, you know. So, you know, if he pitches another month like he did in April, he'll be talked about as a candidate for that. You know, I mean, if he gets to 8 or 9 wins by the All-Star break, and, you know, that's going to be the guy who's going to be out in front. So we'll see. We'll see where he goes from here. I mean, if he continues to improve throughout the year, it's going to be tough to not talk about him in that conversation. Let's talk about the Panda 20-game hitting streak just finished And now he started a new one. He's got a one-game hitting streak, but he hit his home run today. But Pagan's also got a 15-game streak going right now. And I think that's actually tied for the longest active right now in baseball. So we've had a couple of guys who have gotten on really, really hot streaks here. And I just love watching Pablo swing the bat this year. I mean, he looks to me like he still has trouble laying off breaking pitches in the dirt. But he's able to lay off the high fastball a lot better than he has been previously. I've still seen him swinging a few that don't look great, but he seems like he's got a lot more control over the strike zone now than he had, you know, previously. And it's definitely showing up in the stats. So I got to feel good about Pablo's year as well. I've been online. I voted all my 25 times I could for him as an all-star. And I'm going to do my best to get him there. Hitting 315. That's wrong. Hitting 311 after today. So Pablo's looked great. And that's been a really exciting thing to watch. I was thinking, yeah, man, he'll go for like 30.
One for four today. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's had a lot during that streak. He's had a lot of one for fours, one for fives. But then he's also had some really, really strong games. But, yeah, he's been great. Let's go ahead and let's move to the end of the show here because we might have some stuff from Ben to chuck in. So let's talk about our new favorite guy. Chad, why don't you lead us off? Who's your new favorite guy right now?
Brett Pill. He has a sweet swing. I actually didn't notice it. I know he came up late last year and, you know, yacked a home run at Petco. But it was evident to me today when they slowed down his swing on his double it was the seventh inning today or so.
Yeah, he was the one who got the double to get the runners to second and third, right? And then we
exactly.
got the triple. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But it was so perfectly balanced. He had the load time was perfect, the step, the plan of the foot. He even had the tilt of the foot and just threw that bat handle right at the ball. I mean, it was just a thing of beauty. I won't quite call it Will Clark-ish, you know, because that just, you know, can never be as good as that.
Yeah.
But it was pretty sweet. And his stroke really is reminiscent of a Pat Burrell, you know, where he's going to have a lot of strikeouts, but he really throws that bat head out there and just gives it all he has. It doesn't look awkward. It's everything that I would that I long to be.
Yeah, you try to match that swing, you do okay, I'd say.
Exactly.
He's actually, so far as a major leaguer, he's batting over 300 going back to last year.
Oh.
And slugging average of 547. I mean, these are decent numbers, you know, for a guy who's just come up. And while he's not really a young guy, no. You know, he's a big guy. He's pretty tall. I think he's like 6'4" or something like that. And he looks very comfortable at the plate at the big league level. So I like that pick. I like that pick. Very good. I'm gonna go with Angel Pagan. I was at the dugout store the other day, and there was no Pagan jerseys.
Really?
No. I mean, I'm sure you could find one, but it would, yeah. You know, you'd have to kind of dig a little bit. The ones that were displayed were, well, you know, the obvious ones. There was Lincecum, Kane, Posey, but there was Cabrera right there. Mm. And I'm just thinking, okay, well, but Pagan was the other big acquisition we got, but
right,
he was
right.
Kind of the secondary one, you know. Everybody talked about Cabrera as being our biggest acquisition. And Cabrera's been great, but Pagan lately has just been proving to me that if we wanted a Torres plus, and that's what we were hoping for,
Yeah. That
is exactly what we got because he's fast. He's faster than Torres, and he's showed a lot of pop so far, hitting out of the leadoff spot. And while his batting average is still not fantastic, he's been bringing it up steadily ever since his slow start. So
yeah.
He's just, I feel like the guy's going to end the year, you know, close to the high 200s, maybe even get up to that 300 mark because he looks like the guy we wanted as our leadoff hitter. And I'm just really excited to finally have somebody with speed and with the ability to actually, hit the ball out of the park who's hitting leadoff. We haven't had that in maybe since Kenny Lofton. I can't think of the last guy who I felt really good about being our leadoff hitter. And it's great to watch this guy kind of come into his own here, and I'm rooting for it to continue because it changes everything. When you got a guy who gets on base at the top of the order, it changes everything, and we just have not had that in a long time.
I mean, he's got four bombs already,
yeah,
and he's raises, you know what, he's hitting 250 now,
yeah.
So
he was
sub
200 for
yeah,
a while there.
For a leadoff hitter, you need to be higher than 250, but you have to, you know, temper that with the fact that he was hitting like a buck 25,
yeah,
after
exactly.
the first 6-10 games or whatever it was. So I mean, yeah, he's been hitting absolutely fantastically lately. He has single-handedly saved a couple of games for us, including the most recent third game in the Cincinnati series.
That was,
I mean, you know,
that was the game following two really horrible games.
Yeah,
and I stopped listening. I was like, we lost this game, and then I go check the phone after, and I'm like, what? We won this game? That's crazy. That was just, yeah, he literally just turned that whole series around. Like, we would have gone home feeling really badly. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, okay, 1-2, that's not so bad. But, I mean, okay, so 2010 when Andres Torres was, you know, really, really widely touted by everybody as kind of coming into his own as a big league player, he hit .268. So, you know, he did have 16 home runs that year, but I mean, if you're talking about Pagan with four already hitting .250, he's well on his way to being an improvement over even 2010 Torres. So definitely my new favorite guy right now, and I'm excited to watch him the rest of the year. Let's hate on some people now.
Yo, boy.
I think there's a theme to these. So
yeah, I noticed.
I'll start us off this time. I want to hate on Andre Ethier. The guy's just kind of bothered me for a long time. I mean, he's been on the Dodgers his whole career, and if you don't like Dodgers, then you don't like guys who have been on that team their whole career, for sure, you know? And he's just annoyingly good, and it just bothers me. And right now, he's got 24 RBIs already, you know, and he did have over 100 RBIs one time in his career, but that's never really been his biggest thing. But at this point, 5 home runs, 24 RBIs. It's just pissing me off that the Dodgers are playing out of their minds right now. And, you know, we're not tearing it up. We're 12-10, but we shouldn't be 4 games back of these guys, you know?
No.
And it's because of him and your guy that we are. So who's your guy? Who do you want to hate on?
Yeah, so in conjunction with Ethier, it's going to be Matt Kemp. I mean, this dude is on fire.
Yeah, it's crazy.
11 home runs. Matches Ethier with 24 RBI, and he's hitting .425, leading the National League in all of those categories. So right now he's Triple Crown winner.
Yeah,
you know,
he's one of the only legit Triple Crown threats left in the big leagues. I mean, there's not a lot of guys who can do it, and he's definitely one of them.
Yeah, I mean, he's on pace right now to hit like 80 home runs and 190 RBI. I mean, clearly he's not going to keep that up. We all know that. He predicted a 50-50 season. Again, I just don't see that happening, but he's not going to be extremely far from that. I could totally see him doing, you know, definitely a 30-30, maybe a 40-40. And that's, you know, he's definitely him and Ethier and Kershaw are going to carry the Dodgers to a lot of wins. You know, a lot of people gave the Dodgers a lot of crap. a lot of crap last year. They only finished 3 or 4 games behind the Giants.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, they were kind of
a sack
team for a lot of the year, but they kind of put it together towards the end, and they actually made themselves respectable. So
yeah, and so I think they're riding that momentum from the late, you know, last year run to this year. So I mean, they had what, 82 wins last year, so they were slightly above .500.
Yeah,
this year they're not going to, you know, play as well as they have been now for the rest of the season, but you know, the Giants are still 3 or 4 games back. They're out. You know, I do think the Giants are going to catch them, but they could be the Arizona of this year.
No,
I mean,
no one
saw Arizona coming the way they did last year.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, they got so hot.
I think it's possible.
They got so hot for so long, and it was just weird, you know. But right now, Matt Kemp leading the league in runs, hits, home runs, RBIs, batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, OPS plus. Although no one cares about that. Total bases. I mean, it's just he's leading the league in everything.
Baseball player's dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think he did go like first or second in one of my leagues, which was kind of surprising. But but I mean, it makes sense, you know. I wish I had him right now. I do have Pablo on a couple teams. I'm pretty happy about that. All right, let's enough with the hating. Let's talk about why we're going to win it all. And Chad, I'll start with you.
Why? Okay, are we win so it all? We've been talking about it this whole season so far is their offense. Right now, they're third in batting average at .261. They're seventh in runs. You know, that doesn't sound terribly impressive. They're seventh in runs out of 16 teams. But when you're 14th or 15th or 16th in runs,
when you're bottom, yeah, exactly.
That's a huge improvement. If the Giants can hold on to their pitching, I mean, again, you know, we've brought this up before. Their pitching in 2010, their World Series championship year, was stellar. Their pitching in 2011 last year was actually better.
Yeah.
Somehow. And yet they won fewer games. And it really was their offense. Yep. Their offense was their Achilles heel. I mean, it was absolutely evident. So if the Giants can reproduce their pitching from 2010, which was stellar, not as good as last year, but it was stellar, and they can improve their offense just by a couple of rungs on the ladder, I can't see why this team can't win 92, 93 games.
Yeah, absolutely. I still think we're going to be somewhere in the ballpark about 89. I think we talked about it on the opening show of this season when we predicted the amount of wins. But yeah, I mean, the one thing though that the offense still isn't doing, which I'd like to see them do more, is take walks. They're still not taking as many walks as I'd like to see them.
Yeah, it's on base percentage, walks, and hits with two outs and guys in scoring position. It's those pressure situations. I mean, granted, today they had Arias come through, but most of the time it's just been lights out. I mean, they just have not been able to do it.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's definitely, and this is a different, like, you know, okay, so I'll say mine. This is a different offense than it has been. The pitching looks like it could potentially be even better. You know, like you say, 2010 was crazy good, and then 2011 was somehow better. I actually think we could do even better this year because of the rise of Bumgarner, and Zito potentially getting back onto form. Mm-hmm. If Vogelsong has anywhere close to the year he had last year, he doesn't have to do that again. I mean, that was totally out of left field, totally unexpected. And we did not see that coming, and it was a pleasant surprise. But if he, if he's like a 3.35, 3.4 ERA, and he, you know, he gets 12 wins for us or something like that, this is going to be a staff that you just can't mess with. There's no other staff that's even close, I think. I mean, there's a couple that have some pretty solid dudes, but nobody, I think, in baseball. I think any team in baseball right now would swap their starting five with the Giants. And be totally happy to do that. And if Zito can continue down this weird path, and like I said, Vogelsong can do better, just the fact that Kane and Mad Bum seem to be setting themselves up for fantastic years, and Lincecum pulling it back a little bit, I think it could potentially be better. The one thing that worries me still is the bullpen. I don't think the bullpen's going to be as inconsistent as they have been so far throughout the year. But I still think we have a great bullpen, and we locked up the guys that we needed to. But, you know, with Affeldt kind of struggling a little bit, it's not what, you know, we rely on him quite a bit. So that's really like the one area where we need to get better there for this to kind of hold true. But I think we will. So I got to feel good about this team, man. I think we easily have a chance to take the West. And then, of course, once we get to the playoffs, who wants to pitch or who wants to face our pitching?
You know, the Giants are only 22 games in this year. Yes. And they've had three or four or five horrible, horrible starts from their pitching staff. Mm-hmm. So you'd assume that their ERA is completely inflated right now.
Yeah.
Would you say that their ERA right now in 2012 after 22 games is better or worse than their season team ERA in 2010 when they won the World Series?
In 2010?
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm gonna guess that it's almost the same. I'm gonna say that it's like pretty close because
it's really close.
Oh, really? So what was it in 2010?
In 2010, it was 3.37 as a staff
for the entire
right
year.
Now, yeah, for the entire year. Right now, it's 3.36.
Oh, wow!
So it's almost identical.
Okay,
which is really funny considering they've had some. I mean, the first three starts of the year. Yeah. They were just trashed. No. I mean, just absolutely. And with only 22 games, three or four or five bad games really inflates your ERA. So it kind of is a testament to the fact that the Giants pitching staff really has settled down. Mm-hmm. Now, last year they were at 3.20. So, you know, they were a full, you know, almost 0.2 of a run better than they are right now, or they were in 2010.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. If the Giants, you know, they don't have any more of those abhorrent starts that they had to begin the year, they're going to shoot for that 3.2 or 3.25. And if their, you know, batting average is going to be better than what is last year, I again, they won 86 games last year. I think it's really possible that they could win 92, 93. It's just going to be a fact of, you know, how are the Dodgers going to do? Are they going to continue the streak? Are the Diamondbacks going to come back to what they did last year?
Well, they won 94 last year. I don't think they're going to do that. Considering
no,
how
I don't think
started.
So. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm not too worried about the Padres at this point.
No. I don't think anybody has to worry about the Padres.
And the Rockies, they're, you know, they could definitely sneak in there. They have a flair for the dramatic in
they
the
do.
Late season.
They but like to do stuff towards the end of the year.
Right now, I think, you know, everybody. The Giants got to be worried about the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers.
Yeah,
that's it.
I agree. So. But, yeah, I mean, if the pitching has gotten back to that close to you know, 2010, then, yeah, I mean, we can only I feel like they haven't pitched as well as they can. So if it gets better, that's crazy. That's crazy good. So got to feel good. I want to remind everybody to check out our blog at torturecast.com. Ben put a really, really good article up there recently about a tragedy that kind of hit close to home for him. I encourage everybody to get out there and read that. It's a really, really great article. And hopefully we'll be hitting that up a little bit more as the season goes on. I also want to encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also follow us individually at ChadK21. You can follow Ben at Fried Duck. And you can follow me at Willie Dills. And make sure you go check us out there. Like us on Facebook. Do all that stuff. Interact with us. We always have fun interacting with people. And thanks for listening to TortureCast. Sorry Ben couldn't be here. Sorry we had weird internet troubles, but we made it through episode 28, the Buster Posey episode. And we'll see you guys next time. Boom! A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.